Well, it is that time again for informed opinion and thoughtful analysis of the week's top news stories, and it can only mean one thing. It is time for the roundtable.
We'll have a little fun along the way. We got an all-star cast today, so let's start with some introductions. Rafael Yanis is an attorney in Miami and a political analyst on local and national levels. Rosemary O'Hara is the editorial page editor of the Sun Sentinel, which won a Pulitzer Prize this week for continuously groundbreaking coverage of the Stoneman Douglas mass shooting. Melba Pearson is the deputy director of the American Civil Liberties Union of Florida and a former prosecutor with the Miami-Dade State Attorney's Office. Welcome and happy Easter.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy
Good
Passover.
Happy Easter.
Thank you.
Happy Passover.
And congratulations on the Pulitzer. Yes. That's an amazing achievement. Yeah. And amazing work.
Thank you very much. Yeah. You know, it was a bittersweet day in our newsroom.
Mm-hmm.
It was one that, you know, brought, you couldn't help but reflect on the terror and the grief unleashed mm-hmm. on 214, and yet there was also this amazing pride that while the nation turned its attention elsewhere, it was the local newspaper, mm-hmm. you know, through its stories and photos
and its editorials.
That revealed what was, in the end, a most preventable school shooting.
Well, or the state at its best.
Yes.
Remarkable coverage. All right, well, let's begin. I think we cannot not talk about the Mueller report, so let's talk a little bit about it. And Rafael, let me begin by saying, as far as I can tell politically, Donald Trump escapes from this politically pretty much unscathed. I saw that his poll numbers went down by maybe 2 points. But I think they'll come back up. I mean, is he hurt by this? Does he escape unscathed by this?
I don't believe he escapes unscathed because this report has proven to be what many of us were seeing as a Rorschach test. If you were inclined to dislike Donald Trump and this administration, this report only further that belief and in your opposition to him and his policies. If you were a supporter of the president, you think that he's been exonerated as the president has been claiming. So where does the truth lie? We don't know yet. We don't know where the House Democrats are going to take the findings in the report because the Mueller team made a very judicious move with this report. They tried to just lay out the facts and let the political process take over. Where that may lead, we don't know yet.
This seems like, at the moment, Melba, the prosecutor among us, mm-hmm. It is a political discussion that everyone's having, but it's really a legal process that is at the heart of this. There are many people who are watching this and saying any impeachment proceedings start a ball rolling that if it ends in a way that favors the president, he becomes untouchable.
And there's definitely an argument to be made for that. Congress is going to have to make some very difficult decisions in the weeks coming ahead. Also keeping in mind that the elections are right around the corner in 2020.
Yeah.
But one of the biggest takeaways for me, and I actually sat down and read a vast majority of the 400-page report, what really struck me is the fact that a foreign power was able to penetrate our homes. Literally 126 million people on Facebook interacted with misinformation that came from a Russian operative, the Russian government.
And are still.
Presidents come and go, but elections are forever. If they can infiltrate and erode the confidence people have in our electoral erode the credibility in the electoral process, that's going to result in lower voter turnout. And also, they're starting with elections. What next? So this is something the FBI and all of Congress and everyone needs to really focus on to secure our elections.
Right. And they really should tell us which Florida county got hacked.
Yes.
I mean, Senator Nelson was out there. I think he took it too far, but it sounds like the FBI says there was one Florida county that got infiltrated. And why the secrecy?
I wonder, does the county know it is the county?
I don't believe so. Everybody's asking the question. The state supervisor, the person in charge of the state supervisor of elections association doesn't know.
Yeah, Rosemary, let me ask you, I happen to think that if it goes to Congress, it's not so much a legal issue or even evidentiary issue, it's a political issue. I mean, impeachment is at its heart a political process.
Right.
And when Nancy Pelosi says, impeachment is not on my agenda. I just get the feeling that the Democrats, if they push this too hard, it's going to come back and bite them in the rear end.
You know, I believe that that there should be an investigation into the 10 potential obstruction of charges incidents right. involving the president. But a lot of us are ready to move on. I mean, yes, did the president lie? But he wasn't under oath. I mean, President Clinton was impeached for lying under oath right. about whether he had, you know, relations
with
that woman.
Woman.
But this time he wasn't under oath. So do the investigation. Tell it with each step, just like there was Attorney General Barr's letter didn't tell us the whole story. Right. The Mueller report doesn't really tell us the whole story because of the redaction. If the House investigation tells us the whole story, okay. But I think a lot of us are ready to move on, and let's get on with the 2020 election.
Michael, and securing the 2020 election.
I think Nancy Pelosi is one of the most intelligent operators to ever sit in the speaker's chair, at least in our lifetimes.
Yeah.
She's very intelligent. When she came out with that statement, saying that impeachment's not on her agenda, it's not on the table, it was to calm down the freshman class that mm-hmm. were elected mainly as a result of opposition to this administration. She was trying to get everyone back in the camp. And so that move shows just how prescient she is. She's very, very smart. Whether you agree with her or you don't, mm-hmm. she's very smart. She's going to let this play out. She's been in D.C. for a long time. She knows that if she stays out of stoking the fires, she'll let the process run itself out.
What about A.G. Barr? What about his memo that we've heard very many people use spin? I mean, the role of the attorney general is for the people, not the president. What should happen, if anything, to him?
Well, I don't anticipate that anything is going to happen to him, but I think he may have damaged his credibility by doing so, because it's very clear if you sit down and read the report, or you read the summaries of the report by various news outlets, that what's in report and what he said are two different things.
Yeah.
So at the end of the day, he's best served to stay out of it and again let the process play itself out. Whether Congress decides to conduct an investigation, fine, whatever the outcome of that is, fine, but at the end of the day, we need to focus on securing our elections.
Yeah, well, the moment, I think, not since Brett Kavanaugh had his confirmation hearing, when Robert Mueller goes up and testifies May 2nd, I believe it's going to be, before the House Judiciary Committee, Rosemary, that is going to be a moment for this country, finally, to hear directly from him.
The process, you know, we've been hearing his name attached to this for a long time, and it is amazing that throughout the process there were no leaks as
right.
far as we all knew. And so now finally we get to hear from the man himself, who was criticized by the president's supporters before the report right. and now has been, you know, praised. I, though, wonder how much really he'll be able to say.
Well, I do too, and I don't know, frankly, what difference it's going to make, no matter mm-hmm. what he says. I mean, I happen to think William Barr set a template, gave a first impression with that four-page memo, and most of the country said, that's it, that's what they found. I mean, Mueller will say something different.
Mueller right. will drive the news cycle for at least 2 weeks after that testimony.
Yeah. You've become quite the news guy.
No.
Stay tuned, we'll be right back with much more Roundtable.
Welcome back on this Sunday, this Easter Sunday, Passover. We are speaking with Raphael Yaniz, Melba Pearson, and Rosemary O'Hara. Let's talk a little bit about state legislature. It's in its final moments. Kind of always reminds me of a professional basketball game. It really only gets interesting.
Right.
The last
final. Didn't I say
that
all the time?
Quarter.
I watch basketball and take such heat for that. Thank you. Thank you.
Anyway, there is a bill, Rosemary, that appears to be about to pass. Next week, the Senate will vote on a sanctuary cities bill, which is ironic because Florida has no sanctuary cities. So what is this all about? What is the debate about here?
Well, it is a political issue that is in advance of the 2020 election that keeps immigration at the forefront in Florida. The sponsor says it would do nothing more than require cities and counties to hold undocumented immigrants who have an ICE detainer for 48 hours. And but we know that this bill was a trade-off for the E-Verify bill, which right. would have required employers to check a federal database for your status.
Right.
Really, it is, and these databases are wrong. You know, we've seen people, as you know, people who have been held for ICE immigration who are American citizens.
Right.
So it is the camel under the tent of, okay, we start here, and, you know, next year they'll be back to expand it, just like the, you know, let teachers carry guns bill. And it's for a problem that, it's a solution for a problem that doesn't exist in Florida.
Well, I got to piggyback on what Rosemary said, because first of all, the ACLU of Florida obviously vehemently opposes this bill. We're actually representing two people that were held pursuant to a detainer when they were actually American citizens. Mm-hmm. One gentleman was, they threatened to deport him back to Jamaica. Guess where he was born and raised? Philly.
And
so, 420 people in the last 2 years in Miami-Dade County alone had erroneous detainers put against them,
so
and they had to be held in
custody.
But
how does that happen? Is that a clerical error? Is that a profiling error? How did that happen?
That's a really good question. We don't have the answers for all 420, but it could be a combination of those things, because at the end of the day, law enforcement, local law enforcement, should be focused on keeping communities safe and worrying about, you know, God forbid, school shootings, crimes that occur in the neighborhoods.
Yeah.
ICE should be doing their job. They get federal funding for immigration and customs enforcement.
I want to go a step further, because for my fellow Republicans who are listening, this bill is dangerous.
So
it's insidious. I'm not a fan of Republicans who believe in limited government and limiting the size of government, then suddenly saying, wait, we're in power, let's crank it up to 20, when it's convenient, when it might feed red meat to their base. You know, we're from a very diverse community. I don't think this bill furthers the intent. I don't want to question the sincerity of the intent behind the sponsors, but I would say the way they're going about it is wrong. I always have a problem when any bill contains an unfunded mandate. They are essentially deputizing state and local law enforcement agencies, but also state universities, into arms of the federal government's immigration system.
How state universities?
State universities typically have their own police enforcement units.
Yeah.
They have their own police departments. And so when you read the text of the bill, it's cleverly hidden in, if you're not aware of that fact, it's hidden in that they're going to essentially deputize state university police departments to be agents of the federal government.
You know, the unfunded mandate aspect of it is the reason Miami-Dade County stopped doing the detainers back in 2013. Commissioner Sally Hayman took the forefront and said, these millions of dollars, no thanks. And then the county was held up by the Trump administration as an example that it is a good thing to do it, even though they weren't doing it.
The county reversed very quickly, they reversed very, very quickly in the early days of the administration. But I want to go back to the state university system.
Why? Because it was an unfunded mandate.
It was an unfunded mandate, but I want to talk about the state university system, because I'm in support of the DREAM Act in the Congress. Mario Diaz-Balart, Donna Shalala, you know, all these members of Congress from South Florida in support of the DREAM Act. This is an insidious way to prevent state universities from having students, because if a student gets arrested for any item, they can get an immigration or any alleged crime, they could be subject to a detainer on campus.
To your point, I mean, there have been people like this fellow from Philly who was held for 3 weeks, and local governments then have to keep these people in their jails. Mm-hmm. They pay the cost of housing and of imprisoning them, not the federal government that got it wrong. I mean, he was an American
citizen. Completely right.
It was the immigration service that got it wrong. Mm-hmm. Where it's leading is we're all going to have to start carrying our papers. This is a show us our papers trend line.
And not to mention, a City of Miami Police Chief Kalina came out against this bill and said
strongly.
He would not be able to sleep at night if he had to check where someone was from before helping them. 120 business owners came out against this bill. So, you know, the groundswell is there.
Immigration is
a bad
issue.
Bill.
This is not the solution.
Correct.
Yeah, today I want to say our friend Nancy Ankrum at the Miami Herald has an editorial in which she says, in effect, the Sanctuary City bill would turn local police officers into ICE agents.
Exactly.
And people like Chiefs Kalina do not want their police officers to be ICE agents.
They want no part of that.
Yeah. All right, we're going to take another break. We'll be back with more Roundtable in just a minute.
Welcome back to the roundtable. You know, this week, again, thanks to cell phone video, we were able to watch something that happened in Tamarack between BSO deputies and a group of kids from Terra Vella High that absolutely, on face value, shocked the senses. Melba, you watched this, what could only be called a use of force against some teenagers who it did not appear were doing anything to warrant that, and that's just an observation. Weigh in, if you will, on what is now an investigation into use of force in this instance.
Absolutely. This is another incident in a long line of incidences where unarmed people of color have been abused by law enforcement. This is something that erodes the trust of communities of color with law enforcement. And the worst part is we're not seeing accountability. We don't see these officers, okay, they get desk duty for a little while, and then next thing you know, they're back on the street. Or if they're not back on the street, they end up being picked up by another police department. So we need to see more accountability because this was unacceptable. This was an unarmed 15-year-old boy who all he did is that he saw a cell phone, this is my understanding, go flying in the midst of an arrest. He went to retrieve the cell phone to give it back, and that earned him his face being slammed into the asphalt. That is unacceptable use of force, and if everything bears out after due process, those officers should be dismissed and never be picked up by another department again.
So mentioning due process, you said two things. You said there's not been accountability, and yet there's due process. Mm-hmm. Which of those things, I mean, that those are two separate things. Because
correct.
Due process is kind of part of accountability.
Correct. So obviously, I'm not saying, oh, fire them right now based on the video, right? Yeah. Obviously, you have to do an investigation. Yeah. But the problem is, too often, these investigations result in, oh, well, nothing to see here. There's something you didn't see off camera. There's more to the story. And no one ever gets punished. No one ever gets fired, and the community never understands why and what happened. Yeah. So the community is left being like, okay, you've brutalized a kid. He's now never going to be the same. He's never going to look at law enforcement the same. He's going to have trauma as a result of this kind of interaction. And how are our communities any better? Yeah. How is law enforcement any better?
Rosemary, I thought that it was really admirable and unusual that Broward Mayor Mark Bogan stepped up almost immediately after seeing this and said, this is unacceptable, it's wrong, and if it's what it appears to be, which is police brutality, I mean, frankly, that's right. What it appears to be, he said, then that particular officer who slammed the kid's head down and punched him should be fired.
You know, it's hard to look at that and not feel the outrage that Melba so appropriately expresses. It makes you wonder, you know, about, again, it goes back to training. These are tough situations.
Yes.
Okay, you're in a situation, I don't know the whole story, and we do need to better understand what happened.
Well, we need to see the body cam video from the BSO deputies.
And
then we get
audio.
Another
And
point
such a big point. I mean, it's because of cameras that we now are able to hold people accountable and see how law enforcement, which has its incredible power over us, behaves. So that there were cell phone cameras, that there are body cameras will tell us part of the story, a big part of the story. Yes. Interviews will also tell us more about what happened. But in the end, even if he did feel a threat, what is the training given officers for how to take down a threat? Does it really involve slamming the head and banging the head?
This comment, though, reminds me of an instance. When I was in law school at University of Miami in Coral Gables, I had an interaction with a Coral Gables police officer who almost ran me over crossing the street. And I pointed out that I was in a sidewalk, and there were two undergraduate girls who pulled out their cameras and started filming that interaction. I wasn't arrested, but I wonder if my telling the officer, you almost ran me over, because I confronted him when he got out of his car and said, do you have something you want to say to me? I said, yes, you almost ran me over.
Do you know what
they were filming the whole interaction.
You know,
and imagine if you had a darker complexion.
I was just going to say,
on my conscience, because Black Lives Matter and the movement was very high at that moment, all in the news every single day. And I had some heart-to-hearts with friends saying, I wonder how much my skin color impacted that outcome.
There is no denying that the issue here is a racial one, because this very, and police officers in situations, to your point, are trained to do certain things. We don't know yet what they thought they faced, what they were thinking was about to happen. However, that very same police department arrested a young man who slaughtered 17 people at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And that young man got up with them in handcuffs unscathed.
Or Coconut Creek that arrested the shooter?
It was not VSO that arrested the shooter.
Yeah.
Then I stand corrected, but the point I'm making is there is undeniably a question to be asked, and Broward County now has its first black sheriff. So it'll be interesting to see how this maneuvers. But the public perception is that there is a racial component when police confront someone that they are going to arrest.
Again, Dima Loving here in Miami, where you have the same situation where she called the police looking for help, and then she ends up getting slammed to the ground and arrested because she was upset. And she was upset because someone pointed a gun in her
face. This young man is now charged with aggravated assault or
battery.
It was aggravated assault on a law enforcement officer. Mm-hmm. And is that not insult to injury, unless we have not seen the whole story?
And that's a pattern that we see many times.
And before we run out of time, I just want to say that Sheriff Gregory Tony has put the guy on desk duty and says we'll do complete investigation. I will have a little commentary at the end of the program. So thank you all for coming in. Great roundtable.
Thanks so much.